Let me just grab the magic stool first. Nothing magic about the stool. So Keith already took away my introduction. My name is Brendan. I am super excited to be here. Thank you all. I had at least a dozen people come up to me this morning and say that they were praying for me this week. I guess you heard I was sick, so I apologize if I break into a hysterical coughing fit sometime this morning. I promise it won't be that bad. So for the past couple months, actually since really September, we've been in the book of John, and for the past couple months, Keith, more specifically, has been looking at who Jesus is, and actually, it's who Jesus himself says he is, and we've taken a look at these different sayings of Jesus in the context of festivals along the way that Jesus has traveled with his disciples to all these different festivals. And at these different festivals, oftentimes Jesus takes a symbol such as a huge pillar of light in the center of the community. And when the light went out, Jesus stood up and said, "I am the light of the world." So Jesus has taken a lot of these statements and actually pointed them to himself. And today, we come to an interesting point in John. We're in John 10. If you're antsy to get flipping to your Bible, for the Bible's in front of you, it's at on page 745. We come to a place where Jesus is actually in between festivals. He just left one festival with his disciples, and he's on the way to Hanukkah, which is, you know, still celebrated today with his group. And he runs into a man who has been blind since birth. His disciples have a super profound question: did this man sin, or was it his parents? And Jesus takes his disciples on this huge journey, kind of unpacking that. He eventually heals the blind man. The Pharisees catch wind of it. It's a Sunday, and they're like, "Man, Jesus, you're not good at keeping the Sabbath." And Jesus gets in trouble from the Pharisees for healing someone on Sunday. And it all leads us up to John 10. So John 10, Jesus has the audience of not just the man who he healed, but the Pharisees and the disciples. Excuse me. And the Pharisees, they had a job of not just instructing the Israelites in the way of the law, but that way was actually to life. They had a job of leading the Israelites into life. And they weren't doing the best job at leading. And that's where we pick up John 10. So we're in John 10. We're going to read verses 7 to 18. We're only going to focus on five verses in the middle there, but we'll read the chunk to get some context. "Therefore, Jesus said again, 'Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of the sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have the authority to lay it down and the authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father." Let's pray. Jesus, this morning we want to enter into these words. We want to be there, sitting at your feet as you explain that you are the good shepherd. And so, God, we just want to take a moment and reflect on your goodness, your authority, Jesus, just the person you are. And so, God, I pray that you reveal something to us this morning through these words. Amen. So there should be a guy up on the screen there. Yeah, there he is. William Post. Does anyone know who William Post is? William Bud Post. No? No. All right. Okay. Let me share a story with you. William Post lived a while ago, as you can see by the black and white photo. In 1988, he was living in the basement of a house, and upstairs lived his sometimes landlady, sometimes girlfriend, and he was living in the basement, didn't really do much for work, he didn't have a whole lot to his name, when he heard that there is a lottery jackpot of $32 million. So, what does any guy do with $3 to their name in a lottery jackpot? He pawned off a ring. Actually, he got his landlady upstairs to pawn off a ring for 40 bucks. Used that money to buy him lottery tickets. And guess what? He won the lottery. Insane. And I'm not saying that you guys should pawn off your rings and go get and go get lottery tickets. But William Budd won the lottery. And, you know, he did what any normal person does when they win the lottery. Bought a big house, bought a big car, and lived happily ever after. Oh, wait, sorry, not that one. He ended up investing a bunch of stuff because his family said, hey, you should spend your money here. He ended up going in debt, and his landlady upstairs / girlfriend said that, took him to court and said, this guy owes me half of his winnings because I actually bought his tickets and he promised me to split them. Okay, bummer. A repo man came to his door. And for some reason, he had a shotgun. This is America. And he shot at the repo man and was charged with assault. And the kicker, you can't even make this stuff up. His brother hired a hitman to try to kill him. It's absurd. He said something super sensible before he passed away, and it was this. I was much happier when I was broke. There's this American dream, and it's somewhat a Canadian dream as well, that, you know, if we have success, wealth, friends, and everything, our life will somehow be more full. It will somehow be more complete. Ultimately, for William Budd Post, that dream fell flat. And so we pick up in John 10, as Jesus explains that he's the good shepherd. I'm going to reread that passage again. It should be up on the screen here. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I've come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, and the hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the sheep and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. So all this talk of sheep and shepherds, we got to go back to first century Palestine, and essentially their economy ran on two major things. We had agriculture and herding flock. Has anyone ever been to New Zealand, actually? New Zealand? A couple, yeah. So, you know, in New Zealand, so that sheep outnumber humans 10 to 1. Yeah, there's a lot of sheep in New Zealand. It's beautiful, but there's a ton of sheep. Back then, lots of sheep, lots of shepherds. The shepherds spent weeks and months away from home, going around the land so that they could graze and ultimately care for their sheep against wolves, against robbers who would come. That was the role of the shepherd. And the role of the shepherd is to lead the sheep into life. Jesus not only identifies as a shepherd, Jesus identifies as a good shepherd. And not only a good shepherd, but the good shepherd. And he promises that he will give life. And he won't just give an ordinary life, but a full, fulfilled, abundant life. And the listeners at the time, the idea of shepherd wasn't far off. Not just they knew shepherds. Like, I don't know a shepherd. I don't think any of us know a shepherd, maybe. But they didn't just know shepherds. There's lots of talk in the Old Testament of shepherds as well. And don't bother turning here, but I'm going to read a passage from Ezekiel 34. This is after a time of failed leadership in the Israelite community, and God actually speaks to his people, and this is what he says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. This is God. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. You are my sheep, the sheep of my pasture, and I am your God, declares the sovereign Lord. The listeners would have picked up this idea of Jesus being the shepherd, and have immediately thought to God saying multiple times in the Old Testament that he is their shepherd. And Jesus takes this idea of being a shepherd and actually expands on it. And the defining trait of Jesus is that he willingly lays down his life. We got a slide up here, and it's the whole passage. I know it's small, but there's five times in this section where Jesus says, lays down his life. I laid down my life. I laid down my life. I laid down my life of my own accord. I have authority to lay down my life. Understanding who Jesus is understanding his acts of laying down his life. And we know that happens in a couple chapters later in John, that Jesus is actually referring to his work on the cross. You cannot understand Jesus without understanding the cross. You cannot have Jesus without the cross. Who Jesus is and what Jesus does is tied together with his work on the cross. You cannot have one without the other. And so when Keith has talked about the different worldviews of who Jesus is, whether he's a great moral teacher or a prophet or all these different ideas of the historical Jesus, if you read Jesus' words, he's like, no, you can't have just a part of me. You can't have just the good teachings without the gruesome stuff. You can't have all these things without my work on the cross. They're one and the same. Jesus says that I am the good shepherd who will give life to my flock by laying down my life. It's self-sacrifice, it substitutes on behalf of his own, and it frames the entire passage. This idea of the cross, of Jesus laying it down, frames what Jesus means when he says, I am the good shepherd. And immediately, he contrasts himself, the good shepherd, with hired hands. The hired hands who stick around for a little bit but then end up running when times get tough. There's a collection of Jewish oral traditions. It's called the Mishnah. And it was written, it was compiled around the time of Jesus. And there's a section in it talking about shepherds and hired hands. And it's really neat. It's actually the hired hand of the flock is required to protect against one wolf. So if a wolf comes, they're required to I don't beat the wolf or to just get the wolf away. But if two wolves come, they could just pick up their stuff and walk out. They're not legally required to protect the flock against two or more wolves. I'm sure they would lose their job. I would hope they would lose their job. But they're not actually required to protect against two or more wolves. And while shepherds and sheep may seem like foreign ideas to relate to, we all know what it is to lead like a shepherd, whether that's in our family or at work. And we all know what it is to follow like a sheep. It's something I think tied in us. It doesn't matter where we go, we often find ourselves either in a position of leading or in a position more likely of following. And so the question I ask is, who or what do you follow to lead you into a fulfilled life? Who or what do you follow to lead you into a fulfilled life? In the States right now, it's both terrifying and funny for us Canadians to watch. They're the presidential primaries, I think. No, I'm the only one who watches presidential primaries in the States. We had some good comments this week. I won't go into it. But this idea of following and leading into life is so tied up in politics. You just take Trump's slogan, "Make America Great Again," and there's so much hope and promise of life in that one statement. We look to these leaders, and the Americans are doing this right now. They're looking to who is going to save me from my life, who's going to lead me and America into a better life. And maybe it's the flip side. So, if only we were to get rid of this person in office, my life would be better. If only we were to put them in the place, my life would be better. And we do this in relationships too, I think. Whether it's best friends or parents, or oftentimes our spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, husband, wives, we look to them to lead us into life. We bought into this very Western idea of, if I could only meet such and such, my life would be complete. With her, with him, my life is complete and it's full. But is this fair to that person? When we ascribe to that person life, a life-giving quality of, okay, you are going to lead me into life, we are putting incredible expectations on that person that ultimately they're going to make a mistake. And especially when we ascribe to them the ability to lead us into life, we're going to be looking for ways where they're not leading us into a life, and it's going to leave us both frustrated. I was talking to Pastor Keith about this week, and we chatted that sometimes it actually comes up in churches as well. Quite often, I think, is we look at the pastor and be like, "Pastor Keith, this is a man who gets me." Love Pastor Keith. And he's like, "This man can lead me into life. I see him, I'm like, yeah, he says all the right things, does all the right things. He is going to lead me into life." Is that fair or right? Those expectations can be crushing. Pastor Keith can't be all things to all people. Pastor Cam can't be all things to all people. I think he's actually at home sick this morning. Becca can't sing all the right songs every week. She can't make everyone happy every week. That's impossible. And it's not their job. That's the thing. It's not their job to be the one to solely lead us into life. We also let things that aren't people take this place of hired hand and take this place of leading us into life. Whether it's money, success, power, you know, this idea of self-expression, pursuit of happiness, if only I could get one more day off a week, my life would be better. If only I could get that promotion, I know I would have a fuller life. If only I could lose 5 pounds, my life would be more full. If only I got this better car, my life would be more full. We buy into these ideas that promise us a full and fulfilled life. And here's the thing. When these hired hands are leading our lives, when the wolves come, whether it's the wolves of illness, of disease and death, wolves of failure and sin and disappointment, of broken relationships, wolves of flawed relationships, and all these things, when they come, those hired hands are going to be pushed to a breaking point, and they're ultimately going to leave us scattered, wandering, unfulfilled, and empty. And Jesus, the good shepherd, finds you scattered. He finds you wandering. He finds you unfulfilled and empty and says to you, I am your shepherd. You will lack nothing. I will make you lie down in green pastures, and I will lead you beside quiet waters. I will refresh your soul. I will guide you along the right paths so that others may know me. Even though you walk through the darkest valleys, do not fear. I am with you. My rod and my staff will comfort you. But God doesn't know who I am. No. God doesn't know what goes on in my head. God doesn't know what I've let lead my life. God doesn't know the sin I keep buried deep that only comes up once a month. God doesn't know all these things. He doesn't know how far gone I am. God doesn't know me. I did something really weird this week, and I creeped a random guy on Facebook, and I was like, you know what? I just got to do this to prove a point. Wrote in the name John. This guy came up. I know a lot of Johns for some reason. This guy came up. His name was John Mark Smith. Some random dude. I found out a couple of cool things about him, though. Plays guitar. Okay, cool. He worked at Camp Kuanos, so me and him are both camp buds, apparently. He plays paintball. Girls, he's single. He went to Briarcrest, and he lives in Vancouver. This is the terrors of the internet. I don't even know this guy, and I know him really well. John Mark Smith. Me and him would be good buds, I think, in another life. Super creepy, right? Yeah. Don't worry, I don't do that all the time. Just once in a while. And here's the thing, though. I know of John Mark Smith, but I don't know him. Right? I don't know him like I know my best friends. I don't know him like I know my parents. Yeah, sure, I know some things about him, but I don't know him. In John 10, 14 and 15, this is what Jesus says. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. One of the driving forces, I think, for humans in general, is to be known and accepted. You know, it's at the core of why we enter into relationships, friendships, marriages. It's why there's essentially a club for everything. I was walking around a park in Lethbridge last year, and not even lying, there's a dozen people dressed up in, I don't want to say costumes, because they were full suits of armor, and they were having a sword fight in the middle of the park. It was super rad. I wish I could join in, but they were having a sword fight. This was their community, right? They were known, and they were accepted in that group. They could be themselves. But the flip side, the paralyzing fear that comes along that is rejection. It's, oh, if they only were to know this about me, there's no way that they would accept me. Oh, if they were only to know this, there's no way that they would be my friend. And so we often settle for a version of fake openness. You know, it's those times where we're in a small group and it's like, has anything happened to you this week? Can we pray for you this week? And you're like, oh man, please don't get to me. Please don't get to me. And you're like, what can I say that is, you know, just vulnerable enough where nobody's going to press into me, but not like vulnerable enough where I won't get hurt. I'm the only one who thinks that way. Great. We settle for just a way to get by, and we post these certain pictures on Instagram and Facebook, be like, hey, this is my life, check it. It's sweet, I only do fun things. And we come to church, I think sometimes where it's like, okay, let's make sure my family's in order. Let's make sure, I'm looking good. Let's make sure all these things. So when people look at me, they're like, yeah, he's together. He's open. When somebody asks me how I'm doing, I'm going to be like, I'm good, even though inside I'm a broken mess. But, you know, for his sake, I'm good. You know, we want to seem put together, and we're afraid of what's going to happen when somebody knows us. And here's a very scary thought. Jesus knows you. He knows you. He doesn't just know of you. Jesus knows you. He knows your joys, your sorrows, you know, those thoughts that only creep up once in a while that you've never shared with anyone. He knows your pain. Jesus knows your hopes and your ambitions, your loves. Jesus knows when you're being fake, and he knows your insecurities and what keeps you awake at night. Jesus knows you. Okay, don't take my word for it. I'm going to spit out a bunch of Bible verses here. If you want to write them down, you can. It's a challenge because there's going to be a lot. Jeremiah 1:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Romans 8:26, we do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with wordless groans. Psalm 139, you have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. Before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. Psalm 94:11, the Lord knows the thoughts of man. Isaiah 66:18, for I know their works and their thoughts. Matthew 10:30, the very hairs on your head are numbered. Job 31:4, does he not see my ways and number all my steps? Psalm 44:21, for he knows the secrets of my heart. And finally, there's that story of Jesus hanging out with his disciples. When the disciples or the Pharisees across the room are thinking these thoughts, and Jesus is like, hey, Pharisees, why are you thinking this? Like, if that's not terrifying and awesome at the same time, I don't know what is. Jesus knows you. And this is incredible news. It's not just good news, it's great news. Because Jesus, after knowing all of you, after knowing all of your thoughts and your inmost being, what did he choose to do? He chose to lay his life down for you. If that's not good news, I don't know what is. Jesus looks at you and says, you are completely known and completely chosen. All of your flaws, all of your screw-ups and joys, all of that, Jesus sees it all and says, I want you. You are completely known and completely chosen. And the cross is what makes Jesus able to say this. It's at the cross where he takes your insecurities and gives you his security. It's at the cross where he takes your fear and gives you his hope. It's at the cross where he takes your shame and gives you his purity. And it's at the cross where he takes your broken life and he gives you his abundant life. You are completely known and completely chosen. Guys, this is why it's such a big deal for me whenever I get up here and make you feel awkward about getting to know new people in the morning. This is why it's such a big deal. Because Jesus goes out of his way to not only know us, but to make his love known to us. And it's like, man, if we can just be a community of people who know and who are known, who aren't afraid of stepping out in that awkward brokenness, we're like, man, I know if I say this, the next words that they could say could either hurt me or, like, you know, make my day. But, like, being okay with that, because Jesus looks at us, looks way past anything that anyone else, and says, you are completely known and completely chosen. That is an incredible place to be. And if we can make that known to anyone who enters into these doors, how incredible would that be? And this week, if you're like, man, I want this. Jesus not only knows you, but he wants you to know him as well, right? That's the second half of this verse. And this week, if Jesus is tugging at your heart, simple challenge. Psalm 23, we read some of it earlier, actually. Super short. It would take about a minute to read completely. Take 5 minutes every day to read Psalm 23 and sit on it. See what Jesus has to say to you. I think it's a little cool challenge that's super easy that we can do. 5 minutes every day, read Psalm 23. As I close off today, I want to tell you a story about sheep, because sheep. They're not dumb creatures. If you look at them, you might be fooled. They're actually incredibly smart in some ways. And one of those ways is that they get in tune to their shepherd's voice. So shepherds back in Jesus' day and modern day shepherds, to help protect the sheep from wolves and thieves and all that stuff, what they do is shepherds would join forces, bring all their flocks together, intermingle them, and would wander the countryside together, right? More people to protect the flock. And the neat thing is, when they had to separate, all they would do is just call out their sheep. Like, hey, sheep, follow me. And all the sheep that are in tune to that shepherd's voice would just separate themselves from the flock and follow them. So some of the shepherds would play a flute or a recorder or something, and the sheep would just follow them. The sheep know their shepherd's voice. You know, Jesus not only knows us, right, but he invites us to know him. And maybe you're at a place this week where you're like, no, there's no way I could hear God's voice. I don't even think there is a God. What would it even sound like if God just wanted to speak to me? You know, what would it even sound like? Maybe you've been following his voice for years, but you've been separated from him the past while. You know, maybe you used to follow his voice, but there have been promisers of life that have stepped in and have been like, hey, follow me instead. Jesus calls out to each of you, no matter where you're at. I am the good shepherd who has laid down my life so that you may have a life. Follow me. That is the promise, and we know that that's what Jesus says. I am the good shepherd who has laid down my life that you may have life. Follow me. Jesus, we want to recognize that sometimes we don't want to follow you. Jesus, sometimes we don't even want to know you. And God, I thank you for being so patient with us. I thank you for running after us when we wander, when we get scattered. And God, I thank you for replacing those hired hands that promises life. And Jesus, I just want to reflect on you, your authority to not only lay down your life, but to take it up again. Jesus, you are so full of power, so full of grace, and yet you turn to each and every one of us and says, you are completely known and completely chosen. Jesus, make that known to me, make that known to us this morning. And God, we just want to thank you and praise you. Amen.